Hi, everyone. I'm so glad that you're joining Sam and Jeff and myself for this alert and oriented webcast. I can see looking at my screen that there are a lot of you that are joining us tonight by phone and webcast. This promises to be a really fun and insightful conversation. But before we begin, I want to let you know that we're just about to start another online calling course on July 10th. We're in the middle of one right now with men and women from around the country, Australia, the UK, the Netherlands, and Brazil. And so for more information, go to the resource tab and click on the online calling course, but not right now. Not right now. We're about to start this. Our guest tonight is Pablo Giacopelli. Pablo was born in Lima, Peru, where he learned tennis at an early age, and then he soon entered the international circuit, and then he became a tennis coach of world-class players. He is currently the founder of UXL, where he is a personal and professional performance coach, working with athletes and creative artists and business leaders and men and women from all walks of life. He has also just recently written a book called Holding On Loosely, which I highly recommend, which you can find on Amazon.com or holdingonloosely.com. So with that, we'll begin our conversation.
Jeff started the announcement of this conversation by saying that there was something that Pablo said to Jeff that altered his life. And we are all for Jeff altering his life.
Okay, I see where this is going. I see where this is going.
So we can't wait to hear what Pablo said that actually got through to Jeff. And of course, we're already really enjoying the laughter here. This is already a great part of the call. So, Jeff, I'm handing it off to you. Go with it, my friend.
You know, I had something profound to say, and right now I just don't even feel like saying it anymore. I'm not sure where this is going to go, but we're gonna have a little podcast here, and we're going to talk about tennis. But really, what this conversation is, it's about life. And it's actually hopefully going to be a lot of fun, but it's also going to be very profound. And my story is that I was a B tennis player, average tennis player, and but because I was out of medical, I had plenty of time to play. So I started getting actually better, and the USTA thought in their wisdom to move me from a B player to an A player. And it was a really difficult transition because I had broken my collarbone over the summer. So I was now transitioning to a higher level of tennis, trying to overcome a broken collarbone, and I had my hands full. So I told the coach, the captain of my team, I said, listen, bury me in the lineup. I want to play like two or three way down there doubles. I don't want to embarrass anybody, and he did that for me, and it was great. And we had fun. Our team really stunk, so it didn't make much of a difference whether we won or lost, but I got my fair share of wins down there, I guess, and one day, the last game of the season, he comes up to me and he goes, he's walking towards me and I know what he's going to say. And he says, hey, Jeff, would you mind playing number two single? So I said, you know, I looked at him, I said, you bet. As long as you don't expect me to win, I'll play. Matter of fact, I don't think my team won one time at number two singles the entire year. So I didn't feel too bad about it. And I start playing this guy and he beats me the first set 6-4. But I'm sitting there after the set getting a drink of water, and I'm thinking to myself, I think I can beat this guy. And he was kind of a friendly guy, and he starts talking to me, and his life is literally falling apart. He is in a major transition, really, in his life. Well, this is exactly what we love to work with the Noble Heart. We love working with guys who are in transition. And so I'm sitting there listening to a story, and I know exactly what to talk to him about, but I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to minister to this guy. I want to beat this guy. You know, so should I minister to him or should I beat him? So I naturally from New Jersey, I chose to beat him. The problem was he took so long in his conversation with me that I knew what was going to happen. Our game was going to be the last one being played and everyone else that was done was going to be circling up and watching. So I had a real problem and I knew this was coming. And the question is, why am I so afraid of that? Well, sure enough, I come back. I win the second set 6-2. And it goes to a third point, a third set tiebreaker. So it's the first one to 10 points. Sure enough, everyone's done and they all circle around. I can't play for anything now, right? With everybody watching, And I actually win the 10-point tiebreaker on a drop shot. It was a disgusting way to win, but I actually won. All the guys are congratulating me, but I feel awful. I feel terrible. So I call Pablo, and Pablo starts talking to me about my tennis game. And here's the thing about what we need in our lives. We all need good detectives that could ask the right questions to bring us back to the scene of the crime to find out where people, where the robbers are, where they're still living, you know. And I start telling them my story, and I said, Pablo, this is what it feels like. It feels like when I was in college, I played number six singles, I won that, and then I played number three doubles, and the entire match came down to that match, and everyone circled up and watched, and I literally fell apart on the court. I couldn't hit the ball over the net. And Pablo said, he said, you have not grown up. There's something in you that has not grown up since that wound back there. And Pablo said something to me. He said, you're playing not to lose. And then Pablo says this. He says, oh, by the way, the tennis court is just a mirror for life. Well, now that took it to a new level because I'm thinking to myself, I don't even know if I like Pablo anymore, you know, right? I don't even know if I like this anymore because this is getting too personal. You know, I thought we were just going to have a nice little chat on Skype, and this guy's taking the surgery knife out, and he's flaying me because I had to deal with that. I had to deal with what is going on. And so I told him, I said, so I should be playing to win? And he goes, oh, no, actually, you just need to play. You need to learn how to play, and you need to learn how to swing away. So, Pablo, now this is a year ago. How am I doing on this story? Is this coming back to you?
Yeah, of course. I remember it well. I remember that. I was actually, funny enough, when we had that conversation, I was actually in Paris, where the French Open is actually happening now. So, yeah, of course I remember it.
Pablo, what does it look like in a player when he plays not to lose?
Well, I mean, in tennis, really, in high-performance tennis, there is the two sort of polar extremes, which is winning and losing. And if you can, in your mind, imagine a line, a straight line, with obviously winning on one end and losing on the other, and then you place yourself right on the middle of that line. And that's where each player starts the match, 50% of the way to losing, 50% of the way to winning. Now, most players, they try and win by running away from losing. So these players, they're very crippled usually by fear, and they are very scared of taking risks. So they sabotage their own success, and they only really function when they feel like the opponent is either right behind them or right ahead of them. So they always need something to sort of, so they feed off that fear. And then the great ones, they just start the game and they just play. And they play in a place that, you know, I've been there myself as a player and as a coach, where you continue to play, and sometimes you're so deep in that place that you win the match, and it's like nothing happened because you were not playing to win. You were just playing, and you know that as long as you continue to play, eventually you will win or lose, but it doesn't matter which happens, but it will come to an end. So you're not playing towards a desirable end. You are playing just to play. So you're very much in the moment. And it's an amazing thing, you know. I've played in stadiums with 10,000 people, and when you're in that place, you don't hear anything. You don't see anybody. And when you see somebody that is in that place on a tennis court, they are very confident, even when they are in moments that they are under pressure, they remain the same. Their routine is the same. Their facial expression is the same. Their breathing is the same. They look the same. They play the same. They go through the ball the same way. And often when you are in that place, you are the one that gets the ball. It's your ball that clips the net and goes over. You know, it's the one, you're always the one that gets the lucky break. They call it the lucky break. I firmly believe that in life, when you live and you play from your heart, that destiny favors you.
Okay, so I've got to ask you this question. I'm dying to ask you this. If tennis is the tennis court is a mirror for life, what does a person's life look like who's playing not to lose?
Well, you know, obviously insecurity is a constant ally of that person. That person is very easily threatened by others, especially if they don't come packaged in the way that they believe a person that they would respect, admire, or look up to should come packaged. They blind their life to the wider spectrum of what can happen for them. And usually people like that, if they do succeed in life, all they really get is money. They never really achieve anything significant with their lives. Because the problem is that to achieve anything significant, you have to be able to look at the wider spectrum of what you see. You cannot be aware constantly of those around you, what they say, what they think, because then what happens is you start to service people and service situations. Just like the tennis player, you can't be aware of what your opponent is doing or what the umpire did or didn't do or what their coach is saying to them while they're, you know, in the middle of a point or in between points, or what this idiot here is clapping every time you even take the wrong step. You know, all those things, or what the TV people are commentating, or what the, you know, every time the photographers take a picture, you know, you had the media with you, Jeff. You know what a couple of cameras do. Imagine 50, 60 cameras at the same time going click, click, click when you're going to hit a tennis ball. So there is a lot going on around you that you are, if you begin to allow that to come in, you're not able to achieve anything significant in tennis.
You know what was amazing was I won that number two singles game, and the other guys were so excited because we actually won that match because I won. It all came down to my match. But I knew I didn't play with all my heart, and it wasn't good enough for me. And I went home feeling inside awful. I think that's why I called you. And because
the thing is, you won on a scorecard. You see, your tennis is inextricably linked to your heart. And if you win like that, I always used to say to my players, look, you won that match, but your tennis lost.
Yeah.
And my players used to be like, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, or opposite, you lost that match, but your tennis won today. And just observe, you keep playing like that. You just keep playing away like that. And eventually, the results will align themselves with the way that you are playing. But if you try and align the way you're playing with results, that is where it goes wrong. That's the kind of thing where we try and please God through behavior instead of accepting His love and His grace, and then our behavior aligns itself with, you know, with what obviously needs to be. Of course, in all the players that I've worked with, is when I begin to work with players, they underneath it all see themselves as losers. They don't see themselves as winners, as people that are capable of experiencing the unprecedented. And I believe that in the world, if you don't care for your heart and you are aware too much of what others say and do, there's almost like a virus in the world that brings that in you. And there's a virus constantly living in our hearts that is constantly saying to us, you know, you're not a winner. You're not a winner. You're a loser. You know, look at this person. Look what they did. Look what she did. Look what he did. And, you know, and I think one of the biggest problems that when I begin to work with people is there is that perception that they don't even know they have. And that's why every time they come to that place where it's either win or lose, they stop playing. They freeze. So you understand, because they are playing not to lose. And obviously the opposite of losing is winning. So, you know, and so they're divided. And, you know, Jesus said, a house divided amongst itself will never stand. And so, you know, you have to come to grips and say, okay, there are parts of me where I really honestly believe that I'm a loser, that I don't have what it takes. And, you know, the worst thing that people do when they feel that or they sense that is they run away from there. And the most important thing we must do when we feel that is we should walk right into that. And then be still in the middle of that and see what that is telling us about our hearts and where, you know, where that injury, like you said, or that crime took place, where we first began to believe that. And, you know, I remember when I was a child, now I'll be a bit vulnerable, when I used to lose tennis matches, my father used to grab a leather belt and used to whack the hell out of me and mark all my legs to the point where I would be embarrassed to wear shorts. you know, and I remember when I walked, when God showed me that, and I walked back into, I began to shake. You know, I mean, I was so afraid and so imprisoned by that experience that I would begin to shake just sitting on a chair the way that I would shake on a court. It's a matter of allowing God, if God shows you something, it's because he wants to deal with it. And allowing God and saying, Jesus, just come into that place now and do whatever you need to do to heal me, to set me free, and to return me to who I originally was meant to be, you know? And I remember when I went through, and that took several times because it was a real trauma for me, you know, and it was all linked with the acceptance and affirmation of my father. And well, you guys have read my book, so you know all about that. So, you know, several times, and I remember the time where I came into a situation where I was actually expecting to shake and I wasn't shaking. My heart had been healed. And, but yet my mind kept saying, no, you're supposed to be shaking now. You're supposed to, because you see, what the problem is, though we may be healed, we get reflective injury in the way that we think. Yeah, and that's a whole other conversation that we need to obviously have some other time.
Come on, Gary, listen, if you don't come clean with something about how you play not to lose, I'm going to tell a story. So you might want to tell a story now.
Okay,
you might want
thank
to tell
you,
a story.
Jeff. Yeah, it's okay. Like I don't usually tell on myself. Okay. Okay. So you know what? Yeah, I'm listening to this, intrigued by it, and I thought, you know, I can often, when God kind of stills my heart enough to ask what is really going on here, I think what happens to me sometimes is my greatest fear is that really I'm a loser and life is not going to work out for me. And when that's in my heart, then I do think I am playing hard not to prove that to be true to the world. I'm dealing with it internally, but last thing I want to do is show the world that that's absolutely true, what I do believe. And so I do feel like I can often play not to lose. I'm in heavy risk management at this point.
Right.
And so I'm trying to minimize the risk, but also show the world that, you know, that I'm afraid to show them what I believe is really true. And my heart's not engaged with God. My heart's not engaged.
I just want to say something about this whole perception about being present that you spoke about, Jeff, just to bring in what Gary's saying about how he begins to think about, you know, this is going to fail because I'm involved. One of the biggest, our ego lives in our mind, and an ego requires a problem, a situation in order to function, in order to find its identity and feel like it's got a use for something. And usually, you can only find those things in the future. So you start to think about a problem or you start to think about an outcome before it hasn't even happened, or in the past where you go back and you regret a mistake or you start to think, oh my gosh, I don't want that to happen again, or that failed last time. So of course now it's going to fail this time. So you've gone from the present to the future and you're going like a pendulum from side to side and you're completely and utterly absent. When you live like that, or when that happens to you, you are actually living from your mind. You're not living from your heart. And one of the biggest signs when somebody is not playing, just playing, is their inability to be able to, number one, make decisions, quality decisions, because they are so worried about what might happen or what happened and not what is happening at the moment. And also, they are unable to be creative. They cannot be creative at all, okay? And also, they panic. And when you panic on a tennis court, time and space becomes very small. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you begin to think, well, I'm just going to try. And you begin to try. And now you and I and all of us know that when we try, what we're basically saying is we're not going to be able to do it. Like somebody says to you, hey, listen, can you call me tomorrow? And you say, yeah, I'll try and call you. What you're basically saying to them is, I'm not really going to call you, but I don't want to tell you that, so I'll tell you I'll try. And then when I see you later, I'll just basically say to you, look, I tried, but I couldn't do it. So you're excusing yourself before you're actually doing it. You know, when you play tennis or in life, when you try and do something, you usually miss. Whereas when you just do it, like the Nike thing, you just do it. And you don't count the cost as far as, you know, failure and success. You just play. Then, you know, 9 out of 10 times, in my experience, you hit the bullseye. And if you don't, something happens to help you hit it. Like, for example, on the tennis court, You just clip the net, and the ball bounces on the net three times, and it spills over to the other, to your opponent's side, and you win the point. You still went for it. Now, the net happened to get on the way. Something, you know, in life, something got on the way. Something happened that you weren't expecting. But because there's a momentum in you that builds up when you live from your heart and you're so present, you go right through it. You know, this thing is not capable of stopping. So, you know, there's a little bit of sort of insight of why, you know, these things are happening. These things are thoughts that you have. And of course, there is something in your heart that needs to be healed. That's why it's there. But you're purely functioning on the outcome of the wound. You see, and fear, if you think about it, fear begins to cloud your mind. Yeah, well, what if you lose? If you will lose this point, you're going to be 40-15 down. And if you're 40-15 down, then that means that he wins the game, and then you're 4-2 down. You're not. So you're beginning to live in the future on scenarios that you think are going to happen, and in the meantime, you're not fully present, so you're not entirely there to play the point or win the point that is actually going to prevent the very thing that you're scared of, right, of happening.
Gary and Sam, any thoughts on that right there?
In the times that we are living in now, it's so tempting to create the future scenario. Either people live in complete fear in survival mode, or it's just doesn't matter, it's all going down, and they live recklessly, and I don't mean in risk, but recklessly. I just think that's brilliant, is just, you know, stay in the moment and let God create the future moment.
You know, yep. God is always present because God is eternal, and in eternity there is no beginning and end. So there isn't a future or a past. It's just time. It's just here, the present. And when God introduced himself to Moses, he didn't say, I am the great I was or I will, I am. It means,
yeah,
I am here. This is who I am. I am present. I am who I am, you know? And, you know, let's remember, in our hearts is where God lives, and that's where we are eternal. That is us. That's why when you're in the zone in tennis, you know, you lose concept of time because you're functioning from your spirit. You know, Jesus was somebody that lived completely present.
Hey, enough of this biblical stuff. Let's get back to my tennis game, making me a better tennis player, okay? By the way, I go over my whole life, and I go over with a fine-tooth comb on, where am I playing not to lose? Because the truth of it is, a lot of times I do take rest. You know, simply doing a retreat with Gary Barklow is taking a major risk, you know. There are things I take risks. I play hard, you know. But there are areas that I'm frozen. I'm a frightened little boy, you know. And so,
I think we all have those.
And that fear is robbing my life. It's robbing me from that significance. It's robbing the brilliance, you know. So for me,
well, it's interesting that every time God approached anybody in the Bible, the first thing he said to them is, don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid, yeah. And I've learned now, when I feel afraid, to go, okay, Lord, what do you want to talk about right now? Where did this come from,
right,
you know?
Yeah,
and
fear, that's right. Fear,
you know,
is an alarm. You know, fear is an alarm that is just basically, it's basically going off and saying there's something weak here inside you that needs attention, and that's all fear is. The problem,
right,
is we get so engrossed on the alarm, and we panic when we hear the alarm, that we never actually find out what the real problem is. And some people live their whole lives, you know, running away from the alarm, servicing the alarm, maintaining and managing the alarm, and they never actually get to the box inside where that is feeding the alarm, yeah, that is actually where the problem is. So, you know, they died scared, you know, and there are a lot of people that live like that, and there are a lot of tennis players that go through their whole careers like that. And, you know, the first player I worked with had a tremendous fear, the same fear you had, Jeff, but probably 3, 4, 5 times multiplied. And she was 25. She had never been past 103 or 4 in the world, and she was 130 when I started working with her. Now, this girl, you know, I was told this girl will never get anywhere. She's a disaster. She's had some amazing coaches. But it was the opportunity God gave me, and I took it. And we worked with this girl on these fears, on the sort of spiritual side. And, you know, this girl went to 34 in the world and beat 3 top 10 players and nearly,
wow, wow,
beat Venus Williams in the quarterfinals of the Sony Ericsson, then in Miami. Yeah.
You know, if you can't go for the, if you're not playing to lose and you're playing to win, you're still not present, you know. And what he did, what Pablo gave me was permission to swing away again and not worry about winning. Just don't worry about that. just play every point where you want to hit it and hit it that way.
One of the amazing things is that your tennis has improved, and we've never had a tennis lesson.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And, you know, and that is the thing about this concept of holding on loosely and living in this place, which in sports is known as the zone, but for me it's just living like Jesus, is that it doesn't really have to be related to tennis, because in life, you know, also we are in situations, whether it's a business, whether it's a ministry, whether it's a relationship, where we struggle to do the backhand volley, where we struggle to go for that winning shot, where we just want to drop the ball, where we just want to, and we rob ourselves and God the opportunity of taking us to places that He wants to take us and He has planned for us to go to, because we are too scared to give Him full control of the situation. When you went for that volley, you just said it. You didn't think about it. You didn't plan it. You didn't try and control it. You just went for it. And
right.
you left the
right.
results to the results. And that is one of the things about David. David didn't have any fear, but David also was a man that exposed his complete heart before God. He constantly said to God, test my heart. Test the motives of my heart. He always invited God to test his heart, to be in his heart. He never held anything back, you know? And yes, we know he made mistakes, and failure has to be part of every successful journey. So, you know, because that's where we learn. But, you know, at the end of the day, that is what it's about. You know, this whole concept works because it's about life. It's about your heart. It's about your spirit. It's about where God lives with you, where he communes with you, you know, where he intimately relates with you. And it's about living in this place where you're fully present, and, you know, fear will come, doubt will come, failure will come, but they will not be able to touch you inside.
Wow, Pablo, thank you. You know, I want to live in that place. One of the things I learned about a good coach is a good coach knows how to ask questions to get back again to that scene of the crime where the wound took place and to help from that. But I think ultimately what I found out is that the good coach sets you free.
Amen.
He sets you free to play with all your heart.
Amen.
Not that you'll win every point, but just that you'll play with all of your
heart.
There
you go, baby. That's the truth.
And,
amen.
And
I say amen to that.
So what Pablo gave me permission to do is he took away the dragon of winning. He said, don't worry about that. And he brought me back to the present where I could play and just swing away with everything I had.
You know, most people aren't even aware of the present. That is one of the biggest obstacles at first. You know, people don't understand how to be present. They don't even understand there's a present. Most people live in the future. They live on tomorrow. What am I going to do tomorrow? What are we going to do next? They're in the middle of a meeting, and they're already, instead of being in the meeting, they're already thinking about what they're going to do next. Now, for us believers, if that is how we are, we will find it very hard to do two things: to allow God to be part of what we're doing, but also to allow God to do what He wants in what we are actually doing in that moment. So, you know, we because God is present, yet we are absent. So He might be talking to us, and, you know, we might not say,
right.
Well, I never hear God. I have a heart. So it's like, well,
right.
He's talking, but you're somewhere else. You can't hear Him because you, and, you know, and let's just be very clear. The future is a present that hasn't happened yet, and the past is a present that happened. So,
yeah.
You know, when you are present, you're always present. Yeah. And so, and then it's easy to begin to live a life of discovery. And when we see situations, we realize that life is not about fixing, it's not about improving and changing, but it's about discovering. And we're happy with that because we're living present. So it's a journey, and it's a journey where you're enjoying moment by moment, you know, your fellowship with God, of course, but also whatever He's bringing along. And you are actually, you know, Jesus said that in Matthew. He said, look, don't be so worried about what you're going to eat tomorrow, what you're going to wear. Be concerned about what God is doing right now. And when we do that, we relax our grip. We no longer are worried about getting, and then suddenly we begin to open ourselves to whatever God is giving to us in that moment.
Pablo, thank you. What you shared with Jeff, and now what you've in playing out your conversations and your relationship together, has been so powerful. If you have not read Pablo's book, Holding On Loosely, you need to get that book. You need to get it and read it. If you've only read it once, read it again, because we just got a taste of so much of his life and his writing. And so I want to encourage you to do that. So Pablo and Jeff, thank you so much for doing this conversation. This has been great.
Thank you, Gary. Hey, Pablo, thanks for your friendship. Love you, my friend.
I love you too, guys. And well, thank you for having me.
Thank you, everyone, for being with us for this Alert and Oriented webcast. We'll be doing another one in 2 weeks, June 26th, at the same time and place. So I'd really love to see you join us again, and in fact, for you to invite your friends, because we're just here to help people become oriented in this very disorienting world so that we can further discover and develop and deploy our callings. So please come back again. And one more time, I want to remind you to sign up for the online calling course coming up in just a couple weeks, or to attend one of the upcoming calling retreats around the country, which you can see on the right side of this page or by clicking on the events tab. So thank you for joining us, and we'll see you soon.